The Dallas Mavericks stabilize in their play in chasing the West because Luka Doncic turns out was able to play and the Pelicans keep winning. Plus, the MVP battle was not actually an MVP battle and the Kings wait another day. It's all coming today on Locked On NBA.
You are Locked On NBA, your daily NBA podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome into this Tuesday edition of Locked On NBA, where we cover the latest and greatest from around the association. I'm Tony East, the host of Locked On Pacers. He's David Rommel, one of the hosts of Locked On Heat and one of the hosts here of Locked On NBA. On Tuesdays, what was supposed to be a night obviously headlined by Jokic versus Embiid has not instead had that be the case. Jokic does not play, neither does James Harden. That game ended up close, although it wasn't. We'll talk about that disappointment in the second segment, but we got to lead with the Mavs, the hottest story in the league, who could not beat the lowly Hornets twice in a row. We're outside the play. Luka Doncic gets suspended, and yet none of that was actually the case. On Monday, we'll talk some other West plan, and at the end, we'll talk Kings, who could have clinched a playoff spot, but did not. It would have been a very fun night for that franchise. Let's start in Indiana, where I was there for Mavs, Pacers. Mavs need a win so bad, maybe worse than any team in the league in this night. Two straight losses to Charlotte outside the play-in after making the Kyrie Irving trade. Luka gets his 16th tech on Sunday, but the league says JK. They let him play. Pacers were without their three biggest scorers, so it's not like the formidable foe facing the Mavs, but they really changed their rotation. We'll get to the nitty-gritty of it, but David, how badly did they need this win? They rolled through the Pacers.
Yeah, I wasn't sure. At first, it was pretty close. Indiana had a brief lead there early on, and I'm thinking to myself, oh, you know what? Maybe the problems in Dallas are much greater than even we had anticipated, that people have been speculating. The full-on demise of the Mavericks, probably a little overstated, but there is trouble there. I mean, as much as they get the win and they're still in the hunt for the play-in seeding, they don't seem to be meshing very well. Luka Doncic does not seem to be a very happy camper at this point. They're not playing particularly well. I think tonight's win is more indicative of, I hate to say it, the Pacers just being a really bad team, especially with half their starting lineup missing. So it's a good win for Dallas, and yes, they do need it. It's not to say, you know, you have to beat up on bad teams in order to get what you need, and that's certainly a sign of desperation from Dallas, but they were able to come through and have a big third quarter where they really exploded there.
Three of the Pacers' opening night starters were out in this game. One of them plays for the Bulls now, and the only opening night starter who played for the Pacers was Jalen Smith. If you want to know more about what the Pacers are up to these days, that is a good summation of what I could say about them. Their whole team was 24 and younger tonight. It's not worth getting into their nitty-gritty, but the Dallas part's fascinating. They kind of need Luka to play, right? Like, him getting another check would be significant, so that getting rescinded was huge for them. And Kyrie was not he started off really hot. He was the Mavs' best source of offense early, but Luka did most of the carrying work on that end. He finished 25. Jaden Hardy was huge for them with 20. They needed him. But, you know, what I kept noticing and what a lot of the Mavericks reporters on hand kept talking about is, like, you know, they had a different rotation with more minutes for Tim Hardaway and more Jaden Hardy, obviously. And Ntilikina was in there and JaVale McGee was playing and Markieff Morris was playing, like, all sorts of stuff that was kind of atypical for what their typical rotation is in terms of Justin Holiday and Bertans and just the way and when guys were in there. And they didn't have Maxi Kleba, but it was just dramatically different. And I think they are searching for answers, right? They're still a half game out of the last play-in spot after this win. So looking for solutions is big for them, right? Losing twice to the Hornets at this stage of the season is completely brutal. And you kind of have to be introspective after that sort of thing happens. And so not only is it good for them to get kind of a stabilizing, like, breath on this road trip, they still have a few more before they go back home, but also to kind of mix things up and have success has to at least feel a little bit good for a team that, like you said, is just extremely frustrated, both publicly and I presume privately.
It's just a little strange, though, to be this late in the season. And I know you kind of turned things over considerably with the Kyrie trade in February. You had to make a big move. That was it. And at the same time, it still feels like it's a bad place to be in with just a few games less in the season, fighting for the playoff spot here or the play-in spot, not even the playoff spot outright. And searching for answers, overturning the rotation to a certain degree. I know a lot of the problems are kind of looked at from the coaching perspective. Jason Kidd not doing a particularly good job there. Not a surprise. kind of lost the sight of that team and exactly what's going on a night-to-night basis, it seems like. But there just seems to be, I hate to say it, but it seems overly simplistic. It's just a really bad vibe about the team right now. And none of that, I think, has anything to do with Kyrie. Like, I think a lot of people point to the trade and point to Kyrie and his divisive personality and say, well, you know what, it's probably partly on him, or if not mostly on him. And I don't think that's the case. Did, in talking to those reporters or even in just seeing the team up close, did you get a sense of what the problem might be on the Dallas end, or is it just we can't seem to figure it out right now?
Yeah, it's one of those like winning cures all kind of things. You know what sure. I mean? If you're one of those teams that higher expectation, the Pacers were like this last year, where just when you think you're going to be better than you are, and it's not like you can point to one thing that's specifically wrong every night. It's something different or whatever right. it is. It's just very frustrating, right? All these dudes have trained their whole life to be here, and it's just not working out the way you think it's going to, or that it was at one point. It's, you know, it just takes a toll on you. And then everybody tries to fix it themselves, right? They all feel like they need to be bad. It's just hard to overcome. It's hard to rally. And that's why, even again, playing the Pacers C team is like, you get a win and you just kind of relax your shoulders a little bit and breathe. So I don't know if this is going to matter for the Mavs, but they needed it. I mean, they didn't beat the Hornets, who probably had a similar level of team for these last two games. I mean, Rozier and Oubre didn't even play in the second one. So yeah, I think it's more just like, yeah, I think they have some fit issues and some terrible defensive issues, but more just for like sure. a winning cures all sort of situation. But the problem is they don't have a lot of time to do that whole winning thing to cure it all. I mean, the West is, they're still out of the play, and they're half a game behind the Thunder and Lakers right now, and 1.5 behind the other game I want to get to, the Pelicans, who are the hottest team in the league right now, the second longest winning streak in the West, I believe, in the entire NBA, actually, with 5 straight wins. I thought they were dead in the water, David, a few weeks ago when, you know, no sight of Zion returning. Ingram wasn't himself. They kept losing, and they played another team that wasn't trying. We're giving a lot of airtime to those teams today. They smoked the Blazers in Portland, but they need these kind of wins. Ingram had a triple-double recently. Valanciunas had 21 rebounds in this game. 5 straight wins when you need it is big for the Pelicans. You think they are going to make this play-in after all?
Yeah, you know, when we talked a couple of weeks ago, I can't remember exactly when it is that you and I last recorded, but we were looking at some of these play-in teams. I think it was against Oklahoma City and one other that I can't remember off the top of my head. The Lakers obviously were in the mix. And I kind of pointed to, you know, the Pelicans have a pretty strong road record in comparison to some of those other teams. And it's turned out to be fairly accurate in that, you know, they have been winning games that a lot of people did not expect them to win. So I think they certainly look like one of the better teams. It's so hard to tell because it feels like we've seen the different variations of this Pelicans team where they were really, really good to start the year, then really, really bad for a long stretch. They've had their injury issues too. Which team has it? And yet now winning 5 straight, it doesn't matter the circumstances. At this point in the season, when everything and every team is so desperate, really, for one reason or another, for them to be able to find a way to string these victories together is huge. So yeah, I still think that they're a pretty solid pick to lock in a play-in seat.
Yeah, it's easy to, like, we were, I believe, debating who we thought would make it, and, like, the Jazz were still in the mix back then, and now you look at it, it's like, the Pelicans are half a game out of sixth, of, like, the playoff field. Like, 5 wins in a row in the West is massive right now. The back of the front of the play-in now has the Warriors. We'll get to Minnesota later, because they spoiled the Kings night, but they've been playing well all of a sudden. Naz Reid got nominated for Player of the Week. I guess things are going great in Minnesota.
He's fantastic. Great season.
He is a good player. He's going to get some bills this summer if I had to be looking ahead. So it's all just crazy in this West plane. And that's why I hate to go back to the Mavs, but you know, they're kind of one of the stories of the league right now. Like, even winning a game against the lowly pesky Pacers who were playing a bunch of 22-year-olds, it's like, that's really important. Like, you lose that game. The Pelicans lost to the Rockets a few weeks ago. Like, I bet they wish they had that game. Now they'd be in sixth, right? Like, all of these games matter a great deal. So good for the Pels to be taking care of business, and the Mavs need to keep doing more of that.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Why don't we take a break here before we move on to some of the other action around the league, and you can tell everybody about FanDuel.
Of course, we have to talk about FanDuel here today. The tournament is heating up. Final Four action on the way. There's no better place to get in on the action than FanDuel, America's number one sports book. That's because right now, FanDuel is giving new customers a no-sweat first bet up to $1,000. It's up to $1,000 back in bonus bets. If your first bet doesn't win, just go to FanDuel.com/lockedon and sign up today to claim your no-sweat first bet. Then you can wager on everything from the money line to point spreads to which team will be cutting down the net on an app that's safe, secure, and super easy to use. So don't miss your shot at a no-sweat first bet up to $1,000 when you use join FanDuel today. Just go to FanDuel.com/lockedon to sign up. Make every moment more with FanDuel, the official sports betting partner of the NBA. Thanks for making Locked On NBA your first listen today and every single day. Jump on over to Locked On Heat next. Hear what David and Wes have to say about the Miami Heat, who are fighting for that 6-5 range in the East. Interesting season they've had. They continue to be kind of but also no one wants to play them in the playoffs. A very interesting team at this stage of time. They could be playing, David, in the first round, the Philadelphia 76ers, which is my relevant segue into the big disappointment of the day, which would have been maybe our lead and second segment today had this gone differently. Super exciting matchup coming in Denver. We just saw Giannis versus Jokic a few days ago. Now Embiid's in town with the Sixers. He just played a back-to-back. It seems like he's ready to go against Jokic. A big part of his MVP case, not a big part, but a little part of his MVP case is that he beat Jokic in Philly earlier this season. But he doesn't play. Calf injury, no Joel Embiid. For this game, Matt Moore, who usually is sitting in my seat for this episode, shared something to the effect of Embiid had little to gain and a lot to lose in the actual MVP race from this game, which I agree with 100%. So he also had a column come out with Shams Charania in the morning. Honestly, probably a plus day for his MVP race despite not playing. But the biggest story, unfortunately, is that it's just a huge bummer that we didn't get to see this game happen in the way it was marqueed up to be.
It was a lot closer of a game than it probably should have been. Kudos to a Philadelphia supporting cast that a lot of people have questioned whether or not they're good enough and capable of stepping up, especially with Joel Embiid out of the lineup, but no James Harden either. And so it was a big opportunity for Tyrese Maxey and others to have a really, really big game. And they kept it a lot closer, again, than I thought they would be. You mentioned that it was Embiid's absence is better for the MVP case. Care to explain that a little bit?
Well, that was Matt Moore's opinion, but I think it makes sense, right? Because if he doesn't play, he can't lose to Jokic, right? That's why I mentioned that part earlier. Okay. They had that game in Philly where Embiid was better and was clutch, and the Sixers won.
You were talking about the article, Shams' article. Like you said, that it actually helps his MVP case. And what?
All on the same day. This. It feels like is a plus day for him.
It seemed like he took on everybody, right? He was a little not antagonistic necessarily, but he was taking shots at Jokic. It's clear how much Embiid wants the MVP award in his favor. He also kind of took a pot shot at the analytics and the way that they're used against him, and to support the notion that I think Jokic is a pretty solid defender or something along those lines. It was a pretty wide-ranging article, and at the same time, I'm not sure. It comes across as being a little petty and being kind of just focused on this. And I hate the way that the talk about the award has just been pitting one person versus the other, as opposed to just appreciating what all those caliber level players can do on a nightly basis. It has to be my guy versus your guy, or my choice versus your choice. And I just don't see the benefit the way, maybe it's just being on social media too much, but I still see it kind of extending even out in the coverage of the league and everything else. And it feels like it shouldn't be this negative. It's focusing on the negatives of each candidate as opposed to focusing on the positive and saying, you know what, they're both really good, somebody's got to win it. It doesn't matter which one of the two win it, because they're both viable choices in this regard.
The discourse is terrible, and the discourse about the discourse is sometimes terrible too, which is very confusing to say, but many will understand that. And that's why I liked this game in my own head. I don't think one game matters a significant part more, but when it's candidate versus candidate, yeah, it's a big deal, right? Like, it was a bummer that Giannis versus Jokic was like in the middle of a day on a Saturday during March Madness where not as many eyeballs were on it. And now Embiid versus Jokic round two didn't even happen. But these, like, it does carry a little more weight, and the players do care about it. Well, I don't know if Jokic does. He doesn't care about any award, anything, it seems like. But, you know, there is something to players caring about these games and caring about the narratives. That's why Embiid said all this stuff. By the way, advanced stats love Joel Embiid, so maybe not the argument he is intending to make.
Right. Not exactly. Yeah.
But the head-to-head certainly does matter. Like, if he had gone 2-0 and looked better in both games, like, I'm sure some one or two voters would have thought about that, and that's significant when there's 100 of them. So that just kind of sucks. The discourse is a little brutal there. I hope Embiid can play the rest of the season. Like, to me, at this stage, if I had a vote, I would vote for Joel Embiid, I think. But it's very close, right? All these teams have close records. Like, Giannis, it's still not decided, right? There's still like a week and a half of the season to go. It would take a ridiculous something or another to like significantly change things. Like, it's not over, right? That's why this game mattered so much. So I'm really bummed it didn't happen the way it was built up to be.
Same here. I thought we were kind of robbed a little bit. It just adds a little extra drama. It's not that there's a lot necessary too. Again, so many different teams at this point in the season fighting for something of importance, whether it's a draft pick or even, you know, the play-in seed or even seeding in general for the playoffs. And this, you know, postseason awards, like you said, they do matter to the players and means a great deal in terms of your overall legacy and things of that sort. I think Embiid's legacy is pretty well assured at this point, regardless of whether he wins. I think he's a generational type player, and that's still the widely recognized view. I don't think it should ever boil down to, oh, he won X rings or he didn't win X rings, because a lot of that, in my opinion, has more to do with luck than skill. I think that's just the reality, too. We see it every year that very good teams get eliminated, and some teams that are, you know, somewhat questionable wind up advancing, not necessarily winning a title. But so I don't think it, you know, Embiid was hurt last year when he lost to the Miami Heat. And they wound up going to the Eastern Conference Finals. And this year, they look like they're barely a play-in team. So it's just all about, you know, the way these things shake out, and there's no nuance or balanced perspective when it comes to remembering these things. But that's a kind of long-winded response there to say, I agree with you that yes, we were robbed of something that could have been pretty special on Monday night.
Embiid's resume, like if he gets an MVP, probably a Hall of Fame lock, like instantly, which is pretty significant given what his background is. Now the bummer, the other part of the bummer about him not playing is we just spent the first 7 minutes of this segment talking about him not playing in the game. And Jokic did play and was awesome and doesn't even get any shine until this far in because of what didn't happen, which is a huge bummer for him. And part of why, like, again, like the whole, you know, this day kind of, this doesn't hurt Embiid to not play matters. He had 25, 17, and 12 on 8-for-11 shooting. He had 25 points on 11 shots, triple-double, plus 11. 5 minutes. I mean, Jokic is just ridiculous, like from an efficiency perspective. So many games like this where he can just control absolutely everything. Nuggets bench terrible. Nuggets starters dominate, and that's because Nikola Jokic, well, not only because of this, but largely because Nikola Jokic is
a big part of it.
It's so good. And so it's a bummer that this again doesn't become, look how good Nikola Jokic did in this game against another guy. Like, yeah, obviously him doing good is good for his case and good for the Nuggets season. They needed big wins. But it's a bummer that we don't get to talk about that more because he was awesome. He was fantastic.
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. He is actually my pick for MVP. Not that it matters. I don't get an actual vote. And it's just stylistic preferences more than anything else. I don't think there's anything narrative-based in my judgment of Jokic's overall game. But having seen him up close in a big win in Miami, I was really – it just came away impressed with what he does on a nightly basis. And he's just so efficient. And he's such an incredible game-changer. It just – everything runs through him, and he makes everybody else's job so much more easy, and it has led to a whole hell of a lot of winning this season. So to me, those are the biggest arguments for Jokic's case. But tonight, we saw it in completely on display, a triple-double, fantastically efficient, as you pointed out, and again, leading to a win, even if against a Sixers team that did have two MVP-type players in Harden and Embiid out of the lineup, it's still a solid win. You know, Philadelphia was playing with intensity. They had the personnel to kind of change without Embiid there. They could pick up the pace a lot. They were able to they were dominating in terms of pace all game long. And they were kind of setting the tone for that. And then, you know, eventually Denver wound up pulling ahead. I think they had a 18-2 run, capped off by an Aaron Gordon dunk midway through the third quarter. And it kind of looked like they were going to pull away, but they were able to come back. And it was a really fun game overall, despite the fact that the two MVP candidates did not meet in a head-to-head matchup. But still overall, really, really great game from Jokic and another important win in their chase for the one seed there.
I have to sigh before I even ask you this question. David, what do you make of Kendrick Perkins saying that Joel Embiid is ducking that smoke today?
No, I think it's ridiculous. I think it's ridiculous. I mean, look, you have to consider it, I guess. But I think, you know, we've seen such a extensive injury history from him. And to the point I made earlier about how limited he was in the postseason, you want to preserve him because this is all about, for the Sixers in particular, this is all about their postseason. Nothing that happens during the regular season, the seeding, the award, or anything like that matters. It's all about putting this team together. James Harden entering free agency too. That's another big thing weighing on Sixers fans' minds. If you can somehow manage to go deep into the playoffs and keep Embiid healthy throughout that run, that certainly feels a lot better for Philadelphia.
Agreed. On all counts, Doc Rivers said, let me find the exact quote. We're just going to take it slow and be smart. We want to get the whole team healthy for the playoffs. Sounds exactly like what you said and sounds like the easy right choice for the Sixers. Another thing that was supposed to be a huge story tonight, the Kings breaking the playoff drought. One of three games had to go a certain way for it to happen. David and I were planning the show and we had to put the Kings playoff berth in there. But it didn't happen. What happened? And let's talk about the Wolves, who spoiled it and are playing awesome with Kat back in the lineup and Anthony Edwards playing. Let's get it to close out today's show. Thank you, everybody, for making Locked On NBA your first listen today and every single day. Check out Locked On NBA Draft for your second listen. Only a few weeks left in the season. Teams are shutting guys down left and right because of that Victor Wembanyama guy, as well as a very, very strong draft class. Locked On NBA Draft has everything you need to know on all the prospects this year. Here was the situation, listeners. David, I'm pretty sure you know that the Kings needed to make the postseason clinched tonight. They've clinched a play-in berth at least. And this team, by the way, has not made the playoffs since 2006, 2007. I can't remember. One of those years. Forever ago.
2006.
They needed the Suns to lose their game. That was one way the Kings could make the playoffs. The Suns beat the Jazz in Utah by 14. Easy win. They needed the Bulls to beat the Clippers. Bulls playing very well recently. Clippers without Paul George. And then Nick Batum hits a million threes, and the Clippers win by 12. And the third one, and the easy-to-control one, is the Kings at home with a fired up crowd beat the Timberwolves and they're in. Man, that would have been so awesome. Just so they made the shirts, they printed out shirts with like a sixth man thing on it for the fans. And this team is going to make the playoffs at some point, but just to do it at home would have been so cool. They play Minnesota, they're neck and neck through three quarters, and Minnesota pulls it out with the fourth quarter that was strong enough to get it done, 119-115. No Kings playoff berth just yet. There's still one game away, David. I'm crushed, even though it's for sure going to happen at some point.
Yeah, it felt really anticlimactic. And you could tell, like, it doesn't matter necessarily when it happens, either tonight or Wednesday, when it's likely to happen against the Portland Trailblazers, again, who are pretty much giving up on the rest of the season and are likely to play Dame Lillard at any point. So they're going to be able to, again, lock in that playoff seat. But to do it at home for a franchise that has been, you know, just they've suffered so much over the last decade or so. Oh, more than a decade. What am I talking about? Again, it was 2006. It's been 17 years. That feels like a hell of a long time. And for them to be able to do it at home, there was a palpable, you know, sense of disappointment from the crowd as they walked out there. And it was a close game, But, you know, ultimately they just couldn't do it. They got some big performances from Naz Reid, Mike Conley Jr., of course, stepping up. Others having big games throughout from Minnesota and Sacramento, just couldn't get it done. Domas Sabonis was in foul trouble. You know, he wasn't the usual solid game, although they did have big performances from Malik Monk and others. But overall, just a bummer for the Kings and Kings fans in general. But they'll get it done. You know, when I was watching, though, that game, and again, you know, everybody listening to the show, probably hardcore basketball fans in general. Obviously, we cover the league. But I'm just thinking, you know, once the playoffs start, it's so much of it is about trying to draw in the peripheral fan. And I wonder how many of those fans that will tune in just to watch the NBA playoffs will even be rooting for the Kings, despite the fact that they're this great success story, just because they don't have that big star that's highly marketable. They're not well known. And again, they haven't been part of the playoff picture for almost two decades. And so I wonder how many of those peripheral fans will be drawn to the allure of, oh, the Kings are finally back after 17 seasons. It doesn't seem like they're one of those playoff darlings that will be able to, again, draw that kind of attention from the more casual fan base.
It might be hard because they're the three seed, which is like really good. But can the NBA market them as like the, you know, like FAU, for example, in March Madness? You know, can they be that? Because I think a lot of the peripheral fans can go like, yes, I love, you know, to cheer for the underdog or hope they can, even though they're probably not going to be the underdog in their first series. Right.
Right.
But if they can market it that way, I think that would work out. And then teams would go, wait a minute, they haven't made the playoffs in how many years? And then I think you could snowball from there. But yeah, I agree with you that at the start, it might be a little tricky. I wanted it for them so bad at that team. And their next three is Portland, San Antonio. Like if they lose all three of those, then all of a sudden I'll start sweating for them. So they're gonna make it. Like, we all know it, but the two in Portland are in Portland. So unfortunate that they can't have more fans there. On the bright side, I think that because those are their next three games and because they gave out the shirts, like it's kind of like, that sucks. It'll happen later this week. Like they all know it, but
the shirts is a big thing for you, huh? The fact that they were giving out their shirts and made this whole moment for the fans and they just couldn't capitalize.
You know, I think you'll always remember the night still because of the shirt, even if it didn't end up being the way. Right. So, and also the Suns or Clippers could just like lose at some point and then ruin it even more of a moment. But yeah, bummer for the Kings. I really wanted to see it and talk about it today. It'll happen at some point before Friday.
It's just to show you, like King's marketing department, like you never put things out like that unless they're locked in, unless they're an absolute guarantee. That's just bad karma. You just can't put that out there like that.
Bear with me, but like even pretending that both other games were 50-50 games, which is not true, but like if all three games were 50-50 games, the chances that all three went against the Kings were 1-8. Now, the 7-8 chance didn't happen but then that's also not the case because the games were 50-50. The Suns and Clippers were probably favorites, but the Kings were probably favorites too. So either way, unfortunate odd situation. I get why they did it, even though it didn't work out. We got to give credit to Minnesota who has, we gave credit to the Pelicans earlier who've won 5 in a row and it's changed their whole season. Minnesota looked dead in the water when they were 35-37, which right now that winning percentage would put them 11th in the West. They're currently now 6th. That is not even a play-in spot. The Timberwolves are in the playoff field right now because they've won 4 in a row against some good teams, by the way, in there. Karl Anthony Towns hit game winners against Atlanta and Golden State on the road both times, too. Like they have, or I think the Atlanta one was at home. Either way, they're getting good mojo by having their star back. Anthony Edwards has returned. Now he returned in Golden State. They just got another big win. They're really clicking in a way that seems extremely meaningful. I don't think they're going to be like this very dangerous team come postseason time, but for a team with expectations of improving and making the playoffs, I mean, this isn't what they wanted this year, but at least it's not so bad right now.
Yeah, you know, I was really down on the Timberwolves team, even in the offseason when they assembled. You know, the trade was one that I couldn't really ever quite wrap my mind around, and the fit was a complicated one, and of course that wound up being prescient because they did struggle to incorporate Gobert at the start of the season. It's worked out mostly. He had a really good solid night tonight. No Karl Anthony Towns, so he got a bulk of those minutes, and that's why Naz Reid played as long and as well as he did too. So I don't know. I'm not sure what to make of this team. They've been playing so well as of late, and it feels like they're just kind of building momentum at the right time. I'm not so going to go so far as to say that they are a dangerous threat in the playoffs, but I don't know that even if you were a top-seeded team, just because there's so much parity even in the Western Conference, I think they have as good a chance of being able to advance past the first round as anybody, really. Like, it's pretty wide open. If you look across, and I think that's been a hallmark or a defining part of the whole Western Conference playoff races, which team seems like such a powerhouse that nobody can touch them? And I don't know that there is one either. We're talking about the Kings, who lost to the Wolves. The Suns have their moments. Of course, they look fantastic when they do. I'm not worried about the Suns necessarily, but even still, like, they're one bad injury away from KD to, you know, kind of derail their whole season. Denver looks really good, but they certainly look beatable on certain nights, and they've got their own issues to work through. Like, I think the Wolves could possibly make some noise in the playoffs, but that's something you could say about like the top 10 teams right now. Like, yeah, again, a month ago, we had really discounted the New Orleans Pelicans, and now they're winning all these games in a row. I don't know that anybody can count them out entirely either. Like, I mean, you have to pick a favorite once the playoff matches are set, but at the same time, they feel like a team that could potentially win more than a lot of people expect them to. Just because they were so bad early in the season, you kind of wrote them off, and now all of a sudden, they're playing at a really high level, getting contributions from guys like Jalen McDaniels, and again, Naz Reid. I don't think he was on anybody's radar at the start of the season, and he's one point of being great. The Player of the Week award, like, that's incredible for him to be able to get that kind of recognition for his game, but he's been really, really effective. Conley seems rejuvenated after his stint in Utah, kind of not playing for much there, and then all of a sudden, now he's on the other side of things, and they're like, you know what? Every game matters, and he's playing his ass off. So it's impressive what they've been able to string together.
Over 20 points per game for Naz Reid across his last five games, and he's only doing it in like 18 minutes a night because Gobert and Towns are on that team. Yeah, the West is insane. Like, if the Lakers aren't the 8 seed, I think I'll pick Denver over anyone else who would be the 8 seed. But if the Lakers are the 8 seed, like, any team could win any first round matchup in the West, and I'd be like, that makes sense. You know, like, I would not. It's very hard for me to think of what I would consider an upset in any West series, because that conference is insane this year, and whoever wins it's going to get run over by the Eastern Conference champion in the finals anyway. So that is my take on the playoffs to close.
That's a hot take there.
Tomorrow, you'll get John Corrales and Jake Madison bringing you more or less hot takes, or maybe more. We'll see how that ends up going. Thank you all for listening today. Hop on over to Locked On NBA Draft for more on the league and the draft. Is it coming up soon? The end of the season is rapidly approaching. We'll have more on Locked On NBA every single day. Till then, everybody, have a great day.